Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
James Thorburn on behalf of defendants appellants Rohrbach and Compost Express. I believe this is a very important case. The decision by this panel will set forth and clarify the burdens upon the government and defendant with respect to proof of a regulation. It will also set forth whether there is a presumption of enactment and how any presumptions otherwise would be imposed and would otherwise be rebutted. Please keep in mind that the enforcement proceeding under Section CRS 3028-124 has both civil and criminal penalties. While the government brought forth a civil action, this case could have just as easily been a criminal action, and the burdens of proof would be applicable to the criminal action. I believe that there's three areas of analysis with regard to the regulation. First, was the regulation enacted at all? Was there any government action? Is there any presumption to this question? I believe the case law is no. The government needs to prove their regulation with competent evidence. And what is the competent evidence? It's the official record. In this particular case, there is an Exhibit 1 and Exhibit 32 that was propounded by the government. This was not an official document. This was a document written by the planning director. And it was uncontested that this document was never enacted by the Board of County Commissioners.
Which document are you referring to?
Exhibits 1 and 32, which is the large document which they purported to be their regulation, and approximately 168 pages in length. This is the document, both exhibits 1 and 32. One was a 2005 version, another was a 2006 version. And the court determined that this was their regulation, despite the fact that most of the provisions therein were not found in the official record.
Now, can you invalidate the entire document by invalidating a portion of it, or do you have to invalidate the portion that's being applied to your client?
The question of whether it exists in the first instance, don't believe has is the same as whether it is invalid. And I'd like to make that distinction there.
Well, let me interrupt you for a minute. Okay. So for you to challenge it then, you would need to challenge that the part that's being applied to your client was never enacted.
And with respect.
Is that so?
I would, yes and no, because the rules of construction are not that you're supposed to construe bits and pieces. We have a section 2A and 2B, which the government concedes that this use fell under the special use provisions. There was government action, which shows that there was some language of 2A and 2B. However, that is not the only piece of the regulation that was being sought to be enforced against the Rohrbachs. They were saying that this was a special use, and going through the special use process is the only way that you could get the use. The problem is that the special use process and the definition of special use is absent in the official record. There's no definition at all in the official record.
Is there a definition of use by right in the official record?
I believe, no. I don't believe that there is a definition of use by right in the official record.
Let me go back to my question.
Okay.
If there are 10 parts to this regulation,
yes,
and only one part is being applied to your client, If you invalidate nine parts, but you failed, excuse me, if you're not saying invalid, you're saying it was, there's no record that it was ever passed. If the county can show that the one part being applied to your client was passed, and you show that nine parts weren't, is it your position that the one part that the county can prove must also fail?
With respect, if the overall document is incomprehensible, which I believe taken from the official record, it is an incomprehensible document, that yes, that part would fail also because the regulation.
Well, let me interrupt you again then. Okay. So your first argument was that it was never passed, but now when you say incomprehensible, you're saying that even if passed, it was vague.
Yes, and what we are looking at on that particular part, there was, admitted, there was government action, whether valid or not, there was government action in 1986 with respect to providing a section 2A and B. Please remember, though, that this was a document, the original 1983 document was 6 pages long. There was no restrictions on use in the original regulation whatsoever. And as far as we can see, there was no map.
Okay, when you say the original regulation, is that the 1983 enactment?
Yes, it is.
Okay, can you, this is really more confusing than some cases.
Okay.
Can you clarify what happened in 1983 versus what happened in 1986? As following up Judge Carparelli's question, sure, as concerns your client's property specifically, not other problems with other sections.
Okay. Please. In 1983, there was a 6-page document enacted. The 6-page document stated that we are going to have a zoning plan. We are going to have zoning districts. These are the zoning districts. And we have a map. And it was the official zoning map of Elbert County dated July 5th, 1983. That's the end of the document. There are this section 2 and sections 3 and the definitions and all of these things are non-existent in the original enactment.
So as of 1983, there's nothing prohibiting composting in an agricultural zone?
None whatsoever.
Okay.
And there wasn't even a map that anybody could produce that shows that the property was ever even zoned.
But if there's no restrictions, I mean, why would we even get to the map problem?
Well, exactly, and I believe that that's probably why there was never a July 5th, 1983 map, because there wasn't any restrictions on use.
Well, let me understand. Are you saying in 1983 your client's property was not zoned at all? It was devoid of zoning?
I believe, at least from what we can see of the record, that is correct. The 1978 regulation had a zoning map, and the zoning map was blank with respect to all except a few areas. And there's no indication that there was any zoning in any of those areas. Now, we go into this, you know, is zoning a question of fact or a question of law? And they brought on all this witness testimony with respect to what factually may have been the zone of the property. Well, we say it's a question of law, the zoning. But be that as it may, 1978 provides no indication that there's any zoning on the Rohrbach's property at all. 1983.
Does it provide any zoning in the rest of the county, or is in 1978 you're saying the county is just unzoned?
There were on the map, the zoning map, and this is assuming arguendo that the 1978 regulation was validly enacted, but on the map it shows certain sections that were zoned, but predominantly the county was, the zoning on the map is blank.
So it's your argument that as of 1978, on this map, according to this map, either you were zoned or you were not zoned at all, and your client's property was simply not zoned?
Correct.
Okay, and then in 1983, go ahead.
There's a 6-page document, and There is nothing specifying any restrictions on use whatsoever.
Now, when you say nothing specifying restrictions on use, when a zoning says these are permitted uses, are you saying that that constitutes no restrictions on use? That permitting use is not a restriction on use?
In the 1983 documents, there were no such provisions. There were no uses by right. There was nothing in the 1983 document.
Okay.
And it was only beginning 1986 that there's any evidence that there was a government action to try to create some uses by right and all. I have 4 minutes left, and I'd like to reserve that for rebuttal, if I may.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Josh Marks, and with me is Melanie Lewis on behalf of the Board of County Commissioners, on behalf of the appellees in this case. In this case, I think there's two major points that are primarily overlooked by the appellant's counsel here, which I think are crucial to resolve in this matter. First is that the zoning applicable to this case contained valid amendments that were enacted in 1986.
Okay, well, building on what your adversary said, tell us as precisely as you can what exactly happened in 1986.
Sure.
And how that cured any possible prior problems. I'm not asking you to concede that
there were prior problems
before
1986. I mean, if you really want to go back, you got to go back to 1966 when the first indication that this county had zoning, and this county and zoned, according to the zoning maps, this particular property agricultural. In 1974, when they amended the zoning laws, the map still showed that this property was zoned agricultural.
What about 1978?
In 1978, the map is not particularly clear, but it's consistent with the fact that it was zoned agricultural, because the base zoning, according to the testimony before the courts, for the entire county was agricultural. And then the zoning, which was changed out on a parcel by parcel basis on a rezoning, that map reflects that practice.
Well, let's stay with the map if I could.
Okay.
If I read the 1978 map in ignorance of all this oral testimony,
correct,
and I know where the Rohrbach property is, what does that map tell me about how the Rohrbach property is zoned?
It tells you by implication that it is zoned agricultural. That's what it tells you, because it doesn't have, it doesn't, that if you look at that property, it doesn't say agricultural zone.
Thank you.
That's what
you're saying is the regulation says everything is agricultural unless otherwise indicated.
Well, the 1978 regulation doesn't say that. That was the testimony before the court.
Okay.
Based on the planning director's understanding of historically how the counties went.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
But in 1983, regrettably, there was a regulation passed, and only 5 pages were recorded of the regulation. And what isn't, it's not a record, the explanation of why only 5 pages. But if you go back and look at the prior reiterations of the zoning regulations, it's pretty plain that there's something wrong. The full component of the zoning regulations didn't get enacted, because all the prior versions have a preliminary section, a very generic section that has various titles that talks about, here's the zoning map, here's the effect of the regulations, this is what it repeals, what we call general provisions. And then the next sections has the specifics on each zoning regulation or each zoning district and what the restrictions are, what the lot sizes are, those kinds of things.
But none of that's in the
which is the meat.
But none of that's in the 1983.
None of that is in the 1983 regulation.
Okay, so the adversary's description of 1983 is substantially accurate.
Is correct. But in 1986, and this is the key component here, in 1986, some of the guts, and most importantly, the most important guts of the regulation were put into place. And that was the use by right section of the agricultural zone district. And it's that language that the judge was able to look at and say, well, it's undisputed here. No one disputed that that language didn't exist because it had been enacted in 1986. So the court here was able to look at the descriptions of the uses by right, and those descriptions included uses such as ranching and forestry and agriculture and accessory uses. So the court had specific verbiage of what was allowed in that agricultural zone district under the 1986 zoning regulations.
But how do we know the Rohrbach's property was zoned agricultural?
Okay, and that's the mapping issue, right? Because we know because of the historical aspect of it, that they were properly zoned, and with each reiteration of the zoning regulations, we know that in 1983 there's no indication that there was a wholesale rezoning of this, or in 1978. The maps simply were a reflective update of what had happened on a parcel by parcel basis. There was no record of the Rohrbach's parcel ever being rezoned out of the initial agricultural zone district.
But your opponent's saying there's no evidence that it was zoned into the agricultural.
Well, but that he's only focusing on 1978. If you want to go back historically, the initial zoning, base zoning of the county back in 1966 was all agricultural. That never changed all the way through. And then as we move through if you look at, and the court had a chance to look at the totality of all this, we believe, and I think the court in this case, there was testimony before the court that there was an actual 1983 zoning map, but we regrettably it's not around at the time of trial. The deputy clerk testified that she recalled seeing it at one time. There's a draft version of that map that was one of the exhibits that we produced for the court, which put Mr. Rohrbach's zoning in agricultural. And we also have then the updates in the 1990s. The county embarked on a much more specific, instead of a huge countywide map, they did it by township and ranges. Those maps were authorized, not signed off on, but they were authorized and they were funded by the Board of County Commissioners. Those maps were compiled by the planning director based upon the historical archives on a parcel by parcel basis. Those maps are the ones that show that Mr. Rohrbach's property was zoned agricultural. Those maps were available to the Rohrbachs when they came to look at their property.
Let me read you a passage out of the trial court's findings. I'd just like you to explain it to me.
Okay.
This is on page 6. It says, quote, the Rohrbachs have demonstrated, however, that in the 1983 enactment of the regulations, Part 1, Section 1J, did not define a agricultural zone as 60 plus acres.
Right.
And here's the ringer. And no subsequent amendment of those regulations that could be located by either the board or the Rohrbachs purported to do so. Do you agree?
That was the evidence before the trial court.
Then come back to my Judge Carparelli's question. I mean, how do we know that the Rohrbachs property is zoned A1 if there's no regulation establishing an acreage cutoff?
There, actually, the 1986 amendments established a 35-acre lot, minimum lot size for an agricultural zone district, and that is in the record.
35 plus.
Yes, 35.
So you're saying the 60 plus is irrelevant?
Is irrelevant. Because the Rohrbach's parcel is 80 acres.
Okay.
So there's enough there based upon what was enacted in 1986 for the Rohrbachs to be in agricultural zone based upon both their lot size and historically.
Is the 1986 enactment the principal focus of the dispute over adequacy of notice?
It has to be, because that was enacted. That's what the trial court based its determination that there was agricultural zoning applicable to the Rohrbaugh's parcel.
Okay, do you agree that the county was unable to produce any record of published notice as statutorily required for the 1986 proceeding?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I disagree with that.
Tell me then what from your perspective is in the record showing that there was such a published notice?
Do it based upon there was one is legal and I have two factual components to it. The legal component, of course, is the presumption of regularity and invalidity, or validity, I should say, that first attaches to the ordinance as a whole. The other side's burden, of course, to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. Start from that point. But there's two pieces of evidence that reinforce the fact that there was notice given. One is if you go to, I believe it was Exhibit YY, which is in Volume 3, those are the minutes of the Board of County Commissioners' first hearing of the 1986 amendments. The Board of County Commissioners heard this twice. There was two hearings. The first hearing, they dealt with, I think, the subdivision regulations aspect of the enactment. Second hearing, they dealt with the zoning regulations, and that's where the key provisions were enacted. But when you do a notice like this, the notice is usually of the first hearing, because then they continued the second hearing to the second date of the hearing. The minutes of that first hearing, Exhibit YY, specifically state that the hearing was held pursuant to the published notice. So there's an indication right there that the regular course of events was followed, that the county had published notice of this particular hearing. That is also somewhat reinforced by the transcript of the Planning Commission hearing, which admittedly occurs before the Board of County Commissioner hearing. But at the end of that hearing, there's a discussion about, okay, now that we pass this thing, we're going to have to provide our required notice. So we have two components here that I think prop up and maintain the presumption of validity of the ordinance and the fact that notice was given. And on the other hand, the position that we maintain below and we maintain here is that now the burden shifts to the other side to disprove that there was invalid notice, which wasn't done. There was no research done to show that the newspapers didn't have the published notice, which could have been done here, and it wasn't.
The factual matters that you pointed out would be probative of the fact of notice, but not its content, correct?
Okay. That's right.
Okay, what evidence in there is the record that supports your side that the notice was adequate as to content?
There isn't anything specific in the record on that, but I think there's an important point to be made on that. I don't believe that issue has been properly preserved here on appeal. If you go back, and again, this gets back to a reoccurring theme in this case. It was the Rohrbaugh's. It's they're required to preserve the record or preserve the issues on appeal here. In their opening brief before this court, they don't make any specific reference that the 1986 notice was deficient in quality. They make no such argument, only in the reply brief in this case. And it's pretty clear from this court's precedent that if you have a problem with what the trial court has done, you better raise it in your opening brief. You better make it part of your argument. So then a respondent can address it. That wasn't done here. So they waived that issue.
You mean they waived any deficiency in the content of the notice?
Yes, they have.
Well, how could they argue the notice was deficient in content if there's no copy of it in the county's records?
Well, they can still raise the argument that there wasn't any evidence of what the notice said, and therefore, the county couldn't have proved that substantively it was deficient. They could have done that, and they didn't. So this court shouldn't reward them for not raising that issue in a timely manner. The second point that needs to be, I think, considered in all this is the Rohrbachs, this was a commercial composting operation. The regulations here, the uses by right, did not allow for anything remotely close to a commercial composting operation. The opening brief doesn't take issue with the fact of the court's determination here that the definitions of agriculture or the limitations to agricultural use as used by right or accessory uses didn't encompass a composting operation. The Rohrbachs were trying to establish this huge composting operation in a rural residential area. And that's why we have these kinds of zoning restrictions, to make sure that land uses are compatible with the surrounding area. This one was not compatible. The trial court's determination that there was zoning and the zoning didn't allow this as a matter of right should be affirmed. If you have any other questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you.
You'll probably get to this, but setting aside the notice argument,
okay,
why doesn't the 1986 enactment solve the county's problems?
Well, there's numerous jurisdictional issues with respect to the enactment, and I'd like to preface that what they're saying the burden of proof is that they just have to put forward something, and then there is a presumption of regularity. Said, and then that we have the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt to disprove the regularity. And I don't think that's a correct statement of the law. And we have said that it has to be proved with competent evidence. Specifically, and we didn't cite it in our brief, but following up, People v. Gallegos, 692 P. 2nd, 1074, sets forth the presumptions and the rebutting of the presumptions. And with regard to regularity of the proceedings, it's not beyond a reasonable doubt. It is a Rule 301 presumption, which is rebutted by just, as they say in the Supreme Court, some evidence. Once some evidence is presented rebutting that presumption, it is the government's burden of persuasion to prove that all of the proceedings were regular, which they did not do. So the burden of persuasion was always with the government, and that has been consistent with our position in this case. With respect to the 1986 enactment, we don't show that there was any language certified by the Planning Commission as required by the statute. All we see in the minutes of the meetings is we're going to write up something and circulate it. We don't know whether or not the language that appears in the January meeting minutes is the language certified by the Planning Commission. And there's nothing in the record, the entire record was presented to the court, that any language is ever presented. The other thing, too, is
what's the significance of that? I mean, are we still on the issue that your client's land is not zoned at all?
No, this is the issue that Judge Webb had presented.
But ultimately, mm-hmm. is the question here, is what you're putting forward that because there is no language of certification, therefore the regulations do not exist, and therefore your client's land is not zoned at all?
In essence, yes.
Thank you.
With respect to the issue of the certification. That's the regularity of the proceedings, which if they do not meet those jurisdictional prerequisites, any action they took is void for lack of jurisdiction. The map
Now, let me ask you this. Did your client, in a pleading requesting a special use, admit that his land was zoned agricultural?
There is that mention in there. But first, where did that information come from? The only place that could have come from was the government. And second,
You're saying that statement should be disregarded?
It should be disregarded,
okay,
but
I'm
still...
Sorry. I'm sorry, you've answered that. You can go back to where you were.
Okay, but I think it comes to a very important point, if I may expand on the answer there, is ignorance of the law an excuse when it helps the government? In this case, can the government enforce a subjective belief in what a law states, assuming that he was thinking that it was zoned there? And the answer, I believe, is no, because if subjectively he believes that the law states that he is zoned A, and there's nothing in the law to state otherwise, then all of a sudden we have this body of objective law that says the law states X, Y, and Z, and then there's this body of subjective law that the government can use against a person if the person thinks the law says X, Y, or Z.
Now, I took you on a tangent there.
Sure.
You were going somewhere else, and I'd like to hear where you were going.
Okay.
I know you're out of time,
Thank you very much. And I do. This is a very complicated case, and it's very hard to say everything within 15 minutes. The map is a very critical issue of this case. The map is legislation. This is not just a question of fact. It's a question of law. The map is legislation. The legislation has to pass every statutory requirement and due process requirement in order to be valid legislation. We don't have the map. They acknowledge that the maps made in the 1990s was never passed by the Board of County Commissioners, and for that fact, even reviewed by the Planning Commission. None of that happened.
But what they're also saying, though, is that the text of the regulation says anything in excess of 35 acres is zoned agricultural. Does that not get it done?
No, it doesn't, because the language says that an A zone can be 35 acres or more, but does that mean that a commercial zone cannot be 35 acres or more? You know, Walmarts and these big shopping malls are 50, hundreds of acres. Now, based upon their interpretation, that would mean the Safeway in Elbert County and the mall that's associated is probably zoned agriculture. No, that doesn't mean that just because it says 35 acres or more, that that's the only zone it could be. It could have been any of the other zones.
I have one other question.
Sure.
And then I'm going to enforce the red light unless somebody else chooses to do otherwise. What's the practical consequence of your position here? I mean, is Elbert County without any zoning whatsoever at this point?
Unfortunately, yes. I think so. Yeah, it's a catch-22 for this court on that particular issue, because one, people have to have notice of what's going on and what their properties and their liberty interests, and the two, there's the interest in making sure that the government can continue acting as being a government. The Hawley case, which had been cited by both parties, the court reluctantly invalidated the Arapahoe County zoning regulations because of the invalid processes and lack of a zoning map. I don't envy your position here.
Well, be that, we don't want to give the county a chance to comment on things. Do you wish to submit anything on the citation of the Gallegos case? Or is it comfortable if we just read it?
Yeah, since we've never had a chance to
look at that. Okay, can you get a letter directed to the three members of this division by the end of the week, close of business Friday? Okay.
Electronically?
Fax probably best. All right. On that basis, the case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue a written opinion.